Welcome to the ACOFP Student Podcast, a production of the American College of Osteopathic Family Physicians.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the ACOFP DO.FM Podcast, Student Edition. My name is Katie Metzler. I am a third-year medical student, and I'm so excited to introduce our guest, Dr. Fetter. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Fetter.
Thank you so much for having me, Katie.
We are excited. So Dr. Fetter is a DO family medicine physician who started his naval career in 1970 and graduated from the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences in 1975. He is currently a professor of family medicine and primary care at KCU and is an active member of ACOFP on the national level, where he received the Lifetime Achievement Award in 2021, as well as the Distinguished Service Award in 2020. He has a rich occupational history as a family medicine physician, which I'm very excited for him to tell us about. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Fetter.
Thank you for having me, Katie.
Awesome. Can you start at the very beginning of your career as a family medicine physician and just give us a little bit of blurb of everything that you've done?
Okay, I'll try my best.
Okay.
I have to take you back to 1970. I had applied to medical schools that year, was not fortunate enough to get into a school, was waitlisted a couple of times. And unfortunately for me, that was the year of the draft lottery. And unfortunately, I won that lottery, which means that I was on my way to Vietnam if I didn't do something. Not particularly wanting to go to Vietnam, but not unwilling to serve, I joined the Naval Reserve as an enlisted person. I went to boot camp. During that whole time frame, I got into medical school at KCU. I was able to transfer over to an officer's program, and kind of the rest is history with the Navy. I ended up staying in 38 years, trying to fulfill a four-year commitment. But it was probably the best decision I ever made in my life as I look back on it. It wasn't exactly fun at the time. There was a lot of angst with waiting to hear whether I would get drafted or they would allow me to go to medical school, which they did do. And my second 2 years of medical school was paid for by the Navy in a scholarship that still endures to this day for other students. So that's kind of how I got into family medicine. I started out in pediatrics, but I felt family medicine was a better fit for me. I did my training in family medicine, came back after my commitment to the Navy was over, stayed in the Naval Reserve, joined a practice, and went through family medicine that way.
That's amazing. So you are doing some really cool things right now. Can you tell us about your medical mission trips that you've been going on?
Sure. I have a friend. He's a retired pediatrician, Dr. Stanley Grog. I've known Stanley for about 15 or 20 years, and every year he asks me, please go on a mission trip with us. He is the CEO of a small 501c3 that takes mission trips all over the world, India, Cuba, Central America, Africa. And he had a trip come up to Vietnam and called me personally and asked me if I'd go. And I said, you know, I want to do this. I need to do this. Yes, I'll go. And so I went, and it was a phenomenal experience. There were five of us that were providers, all DOs that went. And we had a tour guide to help us tour through the country. We had interpreters. Our basic job was to take care of the children in four different orphanages. There was a Catholic orphanage, a Buddhist orphanage, an evangelical orphanage, and a Lutheran orphanage. And each morning we would get on the bus and drive about 2 hours to a different orphanage and take care of those kids. It was absolutely inspiring. It was sad in some ways, but I learned so much, and I was able to immerse myself in the Vietnamese culture. And in fact, I'm planning on going back next year in March for another trip. I did befriend a young Vietnamese physician, and we are still texting on WhatsApp. So I'm very pleased about that.
Oh, that's so fun. So what sort of medicine were you providing? Like well child checks, immunizations, emergency types of?
Each of us, we set up, the healthcare system in Vietnam is very different than in the United States. They're totally under-resourced. We took our own medications with us, but we'd set up just card tables. And I would be at the table along with an interpreter who was generally a Vietnamese physician. And the kids would come in, brought by their caretakers. And we would ask them, you know, are you having any problems? And, you know, the usual thing was allergies or runny nose, things like that. But we did pick up some interesting things on physical exam. And we basically did a mini physical on each of the kids. And we addressed the needs that they had. Now, one of the orphanages was made up of severely developmentally delayed kids like spastic paraplegia. These kids could not even get off the floor. And we actually examined them carefully for anomalies that we could take care of. But there are no referral sources. You're working basically with your stethoscope and your five senses. And it's quite a challenge, but it can be done. And we all did that. And we were very pleased with how it turned out.
Wow, I can't even imagine. I mean, without being able to refer to specialists, when you know that this kid would probably benefit from a specialist, it really always on you. So that's amazing that you're able to do that.
Now, they have specialists in Vietnam, don't get me wrong, but they're few and far between, and it's difficult to make a referral. And keep in mind that these kids, most of them have no financial means. They have no insurance like we have here in the States for some people. And it's difficult, but you do what you can do, and you have to accept that that's what's going to happen in that sort of a system.
Wow, yeah. So has Vietnam been the only one and you'll be going back in March? Do you plan on continuing this throughout the rest of your career?
Yeah, so I want to do this once a year. I'm going to go to Vietnam again because there was a lot I didn't get to see and a lot of children we can still help over there. And the group that we went with was a lot of fun. Everybody got along and it was just amazing. I was just blown away by the whole experience.
Wow, that's great. And so currently you are practicing. Can you tell us a little bit about the way that you're practicing now?
Sure. I retired from active clinical practice back in 2019. And for the last several years, I've been volunteering for an organization here in Kansas City called Care Beyond the Boulevard. And basically, our mission is to take medicine to the streets and help homeless folks. And we also have fixed clinics as well. Also have a lot of KCU students that do rotations with us. And I get a chance to teach. We actually have a bus that goes out on the streets to the places where these folks congregate. And we provide medical care. We have a small pharmacy. We're able to do some diagnostic testing. And most important, we're just there for them when they need us. And that is so important. And the homeless population in this country is growing rapidly. And I feel this is my calling and will continue to do this. I also have the privilege of teaching at Kansas City University, first and second year students. And that is a thrill, as always. And some of those very students come to Care Beyond the Boulevard for their medical training in their third and fourth years. So it's really fun.
That's another just beautiful way to share your time and share your expertise. I'm sure that the people absolutely love that. So what sort of medicine are you providing there? A lot of preventative stuff or more emergency there as well?
Both, I would say. We see them for acute reasons, sinusitis, urinary tract infections, that sort of thing. But we also take care of chronic medical problems. So many of these folks have hypertension, they have dyslipidemia, they have diabetes, totally uncontrolled. And keep in mind, these folks do not have a home to live in. So they're on the streets, and it's not infrequent that their medication is stolen for them. It's lost. They can't take it. They won't take it. We see addiction problems to drugs and alcohol. But the thing I've learned there is not to be judgmental and to treat each client with great respect. And some of these folks were active members of society. Bad things happened to them, and they fell in very hard times. And so we really try to befriend them. We have social workers with us. We try to find them funds for medication. We do have some pharmaceuticals at our clinics and on the bus. But if we don't give these patients their medications, frequently they don't get them. Now, if they require admission, we do send them to local hospitals. And that's not uncommon, particularly in the cold months. Frostbite, trench foot, those are all very big problems. And some of these patients are very sick, have very serious medical problems that we really can't handle, and they are hospitalized. So I'm pretty proud of what the work we do with these folks.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely sounds amazing. And it's very cool that you feel like that is your calling, and what you've done up to now has helped you in that. Can you tell us a little bit about your career before you retired as, like, I think you had mentioned a suburban family practice provider?
Yeah, I practiced in a suburb of Kansas City on the Kansas side, Overland Park. There were four of us in the group. And we saw a broad spectrum of family medicine patients from birth to seniors. What I liked most about the way we practice medicine is it became generational. We saw parents, their children, the grandparents, and even some great-grandparents. So we had whole families. We knew not only about their medical issues, but about their life, their families, struggles they were facing. And so it really made it a complete practice of medicine, so to speak, from cradle to grave. I derived a lot of satisfaction from that. But on the other hand, I'm deriving satisfaction for what I do now. It's very different to be on the streets than it is in the suburbs. But they're both wonderful ways to practice family medicine. And I would highly encourage both of them.
Yes, it's very cool how family medicine has the diversity where you can practice in different areas and feel very equipped. I think that's very clear in your background that you just told us, is that with family medicine, you're able to practice in suburbia, you're able to practice with unhoused folks, you're able to practice in Vietnam with pediatrics. I think that that speaks so much to not only you, but also family medicine as a career. Did you ever consider, I know you had mentioned pediatrics, but did you ever regret not going into pediatrics? Did you ever consider any other specialty?
Not really. Family medicine was kind of the best fit for me. I could do whatever I wanted, as much as I wanted, within my scope of practice and my expertise. And that to me was everything to be able to do for my patients. I never really considered another specialty, to be honest with you. You know, some days were hard and I thought, wouldn't it be nice to be a radiologist or an anesthesiologist or a dermatologist? But those were just fleeting thoughts. And then I went right back to seeing my patients, which is what I love.
I love that. I know that you teach first and second year medical students at KCU, but do you have any advice for other medical students interested in family medicine? And that's who typically listen to this podcast, is students. Anything for us to take away into our careers in family medicine?
Well, you know, obviously I'm prejudiced about this. I think family medicine is the only way to go. It gives you a complete scope of medicine, children, adults, seniors. A message I do like to impart to my students is about being proud of your heritage that you are a DO, because things weren't always like they are now. And DOs were limited in practice rights when I first started. That's pretty much gone, thank goodness. Now we match together for training. But I always want you to be DO proud. That's so important. We are now 1 in 4 of medical students in this country are DOs, which is absolutely amazing. And we have access to the best training programs. We make excellent physicians. We're hands-on physicians. We care about our patients. We have the wonderful modality of osteopathy to help us, guide us in taking care of our patients and giving them treatment options that our allopathic brethren are not unable to do, but are learning to do. So just be proud you're a DO, and especially be proud you're a family medicine doc, because you are highly respected and highly needed in this country. We really don't need more specialists. We need more primary care docs, of which family medicine to me is the specialty to go into.
I mean, I agree. I'm a third year. I'm planning on applying family medicine. And as I've gone through my clinicals, I've always compared up to family medicine. And there's, as far as I can tell, there's nothing that can compare to family medicine.
You know, once you do family medicine, you open yourself up to certificates of added qualification, like in palliative care, like in sports medicine, like in addiction medicine. You can take fellowships in these areas. And so it really gives you a wide choice of fields to choose from. Like me, if you care to do just straight family medicine, that is great too. You can do whatever you like to do and whatever you have the expertise to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that you can gain expertise through in-person training. You don't always necessarily need a fellowship. You can just gain it, learn it, and then practice it, which I think is another amazing part of family medicine.
That is absolutely true. And I've seen it so many times. Family docs over time may tire of the rigor of family medicine practice and decide to go into a separate area within family medicine, but so to speak, specialize in that area. And that's beautiful. That's their option as a family medicine doc.
Yeah. Very cool. You touched on this just a little bit, but I would love if you would maybe get into more specifics on how your DO, being a DO, your DO heritage has impacted the way that you are able to practice family medicine and how that is different than maybe some of your other colleagues.
Sure. When I first started in family medicine, it was sometimes difficult to get on a hospital staff. That's why there were DO hospitals. Most of them have closed. But at the time I got out of my training, there were still a few open in Kansas City. There was some I wouldn't say overt discrimination, but there was some discrimination that we weren't as good as our MD brothers and sisters, which was totally not true. And we often had to prove ourselves, and we always did. You know, more specifically, DOs tend to put their arms around their patients, tend to hug them, tend to cry with them, tend to laugh with them. And that's all so important. I think many times the MDs, just go into the room with their electronic health record and they just want the diagnosis. And that's all. That's all they have time to do. DOs aren't like that. And you notice that as you go through, as I went through my years in practice, there was a real difference between DOs and MDs and the way they related to patients. Every young family medicine DO will see that as they go through their practice routine.
Absolutely. I've seen it myself in my clinical rotations. The difference between my classmates and maybe some of the other medical students we come across, to me, it's vast. Just as far as family medicine goes, as far as interacting with patients, we feel a lot more comfortable touching people because we went through 3 years of osteopathic medical training where we've had to put our hands on our classmates and diagnose. And I do think that is a beautiful thing and a really important part of medicine.
Absolutely so. I can remember sometimes you educate your patients to what a DO is, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And they tend, you know, once you educate them, they're back time and time and time again. And lots of patients, they don't know a DO from an MD, from a chiropractor, and they just come because they think you have the expertise to take care of them. And you do if you're a DO. You absolutely do. Again, be proud that you're a DO. Be proud that you're a family medicine doc. And I've always found that to be the case. And DOs do a lot of firsts in this country in medicine. President Biden's personal physician is a DO. And he's a family medicine doc. I don't know how many people know that. I was president of the medical staff at my local hospital, probably the first DO to do that. And I loved it. I mean, I thought it was great. Everybody appreciated what I was able to do for the medical staff. I never got any criticism. And but you have to do a good job as a DO. People are looking and they are expecting that.
Absolutely. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword. Is if you have a really good experience with a patient, and they'll know DOs for being really good. If you don't have that great of an experience, or a patient doesn't have that great of an experience with a DO, then they will always remember that they don't like DOs. So it's that, just that expectation, is the pedestal is there that we need Absolutely. To rise up to.
Absolutely. And that's a good thing, because it makes us work all that much harder to please our patients and to do what's good and right for them.
Absolutely. So with that, I wanted to talk a little bit about ACOFP and your involvement. How did you initially get involved with ACOFP, and how has that shifted over time?
Yeah, when I first got into ACOFP, I was also in the Navy, which required a pretty big time commitment, a week in a month and 2 weeks during the summer, which turned out to had to be my vacation as well as my active duty time. So I didn't have a lot of time as I was growing my practice to spend in ACOFP activities. It was years before I even got to go to a national meeting for ACOFP or the AOA. But once I retired from the Navy, it opened up a lot of time for me to spend. And I love to be involved in the organizations that I'm a part of. And I've got a chance to do that through ACOFP. First started volunteering for committees, became very active and recognized for my work for the ACOFP. I still chair some committees. I've gotten a couple of awards for them for my service, and they've given back to me far more than I've given to them. But it's nice to identify with a national family medicine DO organization. And also with the AOA, I'm active in the AOA. I help plan their continuing medical education events. But the AOA and ACOFP are always open for people to volunteer. Now, whether or not you volunteer is certainly up to you. And I had the time to do it and the desire to do it. It was very important to me. And to this day, I'm on Zoom calls, probably every day. And that just drives me to do more. I'm also, I'm just as an aside, I'm a member of a national organization for the military called the Military Officers Association of America. And I go to meetings in D.C. once a year. We lobby our legislatures for issues that are good for military medicine. I do the same for the AOA in terms of medical issues, and specifically osteopathic issues. It's very important to be involved in advocacy for your organization. And I'm applying for a position on the board of this military organization, and I'm hopeful I'll get that. It'll keep me busier, but I like to be busy. And this stage of my career gives me a chance to serve others as well as organizations that I enjoy volunteering for.
Well, that is the true family medicine's perspective of, well, I'm doing all this. What else can I do? How else can I give back? And so I love that. Will you be at the conference next weekend?
Yes, I will. I leave Wednesday for New Orleans. It's going to be a great conference. Lots of CME topics. We have excellent people presenting and putting together the program. There's also a lot of social activity that goes on, chance to meet with your old buddies that you haven't seen for a year or two. And it's just a lot of fun, and it's quite an experience. And, you know, we're all DO family docs, no matter what subspecialty we may go into. So it's really a cool time, and it's a chance to reconnect and also get the CME that you need as you go through your career.
Of course. Do you have any recommendations for the students attending ACOFP conference this year, or any students interested in getting involved with ACOFP, how we can continue our relationship with ACOFP going forward into residents and then into attendings?
Yeah, there's definitely a student track. There's a resident track. specifically designed for those two groups of people. And they're pretty well attended in the past, and I'm looking for that to be the same this year. And they have some special programming on. They have a think tank, which I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. I want you all to be able to experience that. It's basically a way to promote family medicine to medical students as they choose their residencies. And we have a special section on OMT, which I'm going to be a table trainer for. And there's just a lot going on aside from the traditional CME that students can always attend themselves, that the practicing physicians go to. There's also a House of Delegates that deals with political issues and how we should advocate for our organization. Good food, enough to drink to satisfy anybody, especially in New Orleans. So I've not ever been there before, so I'm looking forward to that. And just having fun with people I want to be around. DO Family Docs.
The best people out there, right?
Yes, ma'am, the best.
Well, I will be at the think tank. I'll be at the conference next weekend, and I will be participating in a think tank. So I will get to see you there.
Absolutely. Great to see you today. Yeah. And see you then.
Well, and I appreciate you chatting with us. I'm looking forward for this episode to be released. I think a lot of people will get a lot of good things from what you've said. And I really appreciate you being willing to do this.
Thank you, Katie, for having me. It's been a pleasure. And I really like this concept of podcasting DO Family Medicine Docs so that everybody can see what we do. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The ACOFP Student Podcast is a production of the American College of Osteopathic Family Physicians. To learn more about ACOFP, please visit www.acofp.org.